I just so appreciate both of you, Ajit. Like, had the pleasure of meeting you years ago and had that conversation, and had no idea where that conversation would go. And, you know, thousands of downloads later, I didn't realize one of my dearest friends, Tripti, actually not only watched the Netflix series, listened to our conversation, has been a patron for a long time. So the conversations can flow anyway. I come in as a moderator only as needed, but consider this time as you two connecting, learning more about each other, organization, and hopefully encourage other people to be part of this whole movement.
Yeah, it's wonderful to be back. And yeah, that conversation was really great. And it's been so many years, so much has happened since then. But it's really great to see you, Dan, and Tripti. It's really nice to meet you. So.
Yeah, and it was all like so off the cuff, right? We were meeting for dinner the other day and we talked about Shanti Bhavan and she connected us, and it was just wonderful.
I know. Yeah, so let's kick it off. Maybe have Ajit tell us a few things about Shanti Bhavan. Like, again, I'm a creator. Tripti is a patron, and we would love to both learn more about the development, and including anything that you feel comfortable sharing.
Sure. Should I talk about Shanti Bhavan in case people don't know the basics about it?
We should definitely assume that people who are listening to this may not have found out about what it is.
Right, right. So Shanti Bhavan is a poverty alleviation program, but we use education as our tool to reach our goals of uplifting children from the most discriminated communities and the most impoverished communities. We are a boarding school based in Tamil Nadu, India, which is in the south. Every single child that comes to Shanti Bhavan starts with us at the age of 4 years old, preschool. They stay with us until they graduate from 12th grade. Then they go on to college, which is either supported by us or they get full scholarships or partial scholarships, and then we cover the rest, either in India or in the U.S. So our commitment with each child is really from the first day of school to the very first day. The impact has been radical. When we think about poverty alleviation, or we think about, you know, education, usually it's incremental changes. You know, maybe a child from poverty will have a slightly better life. Maybe they're able to cover, you know, have a slightly better place to live in. But it's really tiny, tiny incremental changes. For our kids who come from urban slums or rural villages where they don't have a house or one room shack with no electricity, no indoor plumbing, no water, no toilets, they go on to work at Google, Amazon, Mercedes-Benz, or Goldman Sachs, and that radical change in their life not only empowers them to escape poverty, but it helps them uplift their families and their communities.
Wow.
That's like the real impact that when you see them working in, you know, these world-class companies or studying in world-class universities.
Yeah.
It is. It really is about that. Our theory of change is invest in catalysts that can impact their own communities, right? I think one challenge sometimes with governmental intervention or NGO intervention is we're trying to do too many things at once, and that dilutes the effect of all of the things we're doing. None of the things we're doing effectively, none of them are being done well. They're doing it at a level that doesn't really change the dynamic. It doesn't change what's happening on the ground. Ours is to focus very specifically on a smaller set of kids, but empower, uplift their lives, uplift their communities, and have a ripple effect throughout. And we see that, I think, in the modern day, like for good or for bad, singular individuals can have an outsized impact on their communities, whether it's like local community leaders who maybe start unions or lead unions, and we'll see unionization of different companies, to obviously corporate leaders, some of them great, some of them not, but they have huge impacts on society. We believe that kids from our community, from Shanti Bhavan, they're kind of the secret sauce. There's something magical about them, something really special. And here's what's special about them. They came from the worst and most challenging circumstances, and they've seen it all. Alcoholism, physical sexual abuse, deprivation, malnutrition, trauma, and of course, extreme poverty. So they've been in the worst situations, but they have all the tools and all of the education of, you know, upper class, white collar education. They are, what we do for them is not, we do not discriminate and think, oh, well, you're from poverty, so we shouldn't give you a lot. We give them the best we can afford. We really empower them with all the tools to be successful themselves. Mm-hmm. And what we see and what we believe is they'll take those tools, those really powerful tools, and go on and do some really amazing things, but they'll have the consciousness and the awareness of those who have very little, who came from deprivation. And so we will hopefully do something different, right? That they won't replicate that cycle of oppression, but actually they'll take those tools and do something really unique, something that I can't see because I didn't grow up in that. But maybe two of you couldn't see, but something that's really unique. And we are already seeing them thinking.
Yeah, so actually, can I jump in, mention something here? So that's exactly what I think is the major like differentiator of your organization from all the other NGOs back in India, sort of, you know, trying to help alleviate poverty or, you know, educate the girl child and things like that. I think it's the idea that your organization supports a child from like A to Z, so that it's like a fully paid boarding school for them. Not just like a day school where they can come during the day and then they go back to their old environments, their environments which are not very conducive to continuing education, right? So that is what typically happens in India, that yes, you can give them free education, but they'll still go back to their homes, mm-hmm. which are not very supportive. So I think that's the key differentiator of your organization, which is what makes all the difference in terms of how it would impact the students who graduate, get jobs, and then how they can give back to their communities. And this is what sort of really also like pulled me towards wanting to support your organization, because I have seen in my own life, like my mother, my grandmother, all of them sort of trying to help the children of, you know, people who are household help. For example, mm-hmm. traditionally in India, you have people who come and help you at home mm-hmm. doing different tasks around the house. And then like my grandmother, my mom, they would always want to educate their children, you know, the boys, girls, or whoever they, whatever that might be. But I have always seen that they never continue with the education of especially the girl child, mm-hmm. even though, let's say, my, you know, their education was paid for by my family. I'm just giving an example, let's say, right? One of the girl child's education was paid for. But once she reached like high school, they only had two choices. She would either get married off mm-hmm. or she would start helping out in somebody else's household. Mm-hmm. So that's how I think Shanti Bhavan is changing the pattern of empowering these children and these communities. So that's what pulled me towards your organization's mission.
I appreciate that, Tripti. And I think you really hit on some really complex and nuanced ideas that a lot of people don't understand. I think first and foremost, we see in the U.S., for decades, there was the basic literacy, that idea of just reading and writing. And you didn't really kind of analyze what that would mean, or they would go and do primary school or just get to the classroom, get them in the classroom. That's all. The idea that getting them in the classroom is enough really avoids the elephant in the room is once they're outside of the classroom, what happens? They go back home, what happens, right? Do they have enough food? Do they have a safe environment? Is there an abusive, you know, parent or sibling in the house, or an abusive uncle? Is there electricity? Can they read at night? Can they study? Does the girl have to walk a mile to find a safe spot to go to the bathroom with some privacy, right? All of those are issues that our kids deal with if they're back home, yeah. and a bunch of others that we're not talking about. But there is a lot of issues that they face. So that's the first problem. And the second is, and I alluded to this before, but it is our unconscious bias that all of us have, which is, I think we believe that the child from poverty maybe not just quite capable enough, or maybe that like it's okay for them to get a little bit of education, but there's a glass ceiling. Their capabilities are limited. So if their education is limited, that's okay. Is they're getting to where they could probably go, but they can't go further. And Shanti Bhavan is very much in defiance that our belief is that a child from poverty is just as capable and just as skilled and just as smart as anybody else, but they need a couple of things. They need all the resources that a child from a middle class or an upper class family. They need that high quality education, and they need an infrastructure around them. And that means the individuals, the caregivers, the administrators, the teachers who believe in, who love them and say, yes, you can do it. Yes, you can do better. And to push them sometimes with like that Indian tough love and say, no, you can perform better. And I know you can do it. And I'm going to give you the resources to do it. But I haven't been also get the expectations that a child will know if you don't believe. A child will know that you don't think they're capable. They'll read it in your face. They'll read it in your voice. They'll read it in the things you don't say to them, that you don't urge them, that you accept like a low score, or that they didn't study, or they didn't do their homework, or all of those things. And so Shanti Bhavan really handles all of that. It really tackles all those complex challenges by the boarding school. Simultaneously, we're tackling the complex family challenges by negotiating with the parents and really like holding them off and saying, no, you aren't going to marry off your daughter at 14 or put her to work or put your son in the quarry and have him start breaking stones at 15. You have to keep them in school. You need to invest in their education. A lot of complex negotiations, a lot of complex conversations. But that is part of what makes us different.
Yeah. Can I ask one question? Yeah. So does it, how often does it happen that the parents will take the kids out of the school halfway or some part of the way?
A lot less than it used to. Yeah. In the first years, we had high attrition, you know, 40% of the class, 50% of the class. So it was really heartbreaking. And that was really tough. And that would be throughout the whole life cycle of it, you know, of a child being at the school, but it could be at any age. But we had a lot of challenges. Over the years, we've gotten a lot better at kind of mitigating that, explaining things to the parents, explaining why they should keep their child in the program, what was important with it, why education matters, why they should go into college, why what will happen if they get a job. That's helped a lot, that we've had a lot of graduates who come from the same communities or the same regions, and they're role models for the parents with younger kids. So they're able to almost act as our ambassadors and as our communicators with other parents who still have their kids there, is to say, hey, I was a Shanti Bhavan child. Now I'm working at Google and I'm making all this money and I am able to take care of my parents. You keep your child in here and they'll be able to take care of them. So that helps. That said, even now to this day, within the first 2 to 3 years at Shanti Bhavan, that's when they're most vulnerable to being pulled out by a parent or a grandparent who gets very insistent that their grandchild is not a child. So we will probably lose 1 to 2 kids every year, maybe 3 kids every year, who get pulled out in preschool, kindergarten, or first grade. They get past first grade, second grade, then the parents stop pulling. They're really invested.
Yeah, and I have I asked that specific question because I had firsthand experience with that. Because the first couple of years that I officially became a sponsor, I was sponsoring this one particular child, and then I think late last year, mid of last year, I got a communication from your office that they have changed the child who I'm supporting now because Lal had left the school because his parents had taken him out. Yeah. So I'm like, why? I was like a little sad. I was like, why did they take him out? Yeah. And I'd gotten used to seeing his videos every quarter. Like, you know, they would send me some greeting card signed by him or painted by him and a little video. And I kind of like, you know, become attached to seeing.
Yeah, no, of course.
Well, yeah. So that's how that thing.
It's tough. As hard as that is for you, it's like 10 times harder for me every time I hear that news or we have that problem. And we try our best to convince a parent. But there's sometimes it's strange circumstances, like they're completely moving from the region. And that's one of the, among the many questions that we ask parents when they first enroll is, are you planning to stay in the area for a while? Is there any plans to move? You know, will other life circumstances happen? Sometimes it's a religious issue too. Sometimes because we're a non-sectarian organization, there isn't religious services or anything like that. There's quiet prayer areas where you can go and pray quietly, but we have had parents pull out because they want to send their kids to something with more religious element to it
Okay.
So there's so many like weird complexities to like why a parent may
Yeah. By the way, I'm just loving, and please, no money needs permissions to start asking each other questions.
Okay.
Because I'm just absorbing and hearing this, and the fact that you reflected on the fact that you get images, you get signed.
Right.
Cards.
Yeah.
And it seems like you're
very powerful. That's powerful. And, you know, I recently, from the new kid, right, they sent me a video wishing me Happy New Year and stuff like that. And he actually wished me Happy New Year, and he called out my name at the end of the video. And that was just so touching, you know. It was just, I'm like, I want to go meet this kid. But I know you also have some policies about not letting too many details.
Yeah.
Too many details about the kids.
It's a complex part. You know, on one hand, we want to make our supporters aware of their child's reality and lived experiences. So that's why they do communicate the way they do, so that you know what their day-to-day life is on some level. Like, they're able to communicate pieces of who they are, because a lot of our supporters will never come to the school and visit. And also we get a lot of requests, so it becomes very difficult to navigate those. Like, it's, you know, I think sometimes a visitor thinks, like, oh, well, I'm just visiting school. It's not going to take a lot of effort. But actually, from our point of view, we try to be good hosts, so it does end up taking a lot of effort from us, and it can distract from our school and our classes. But so, you know, to ensure that our supporters do have some kind of understanding of what's really happening there, we try to have that kind of communication, so that you do have a real connection and understand that what's happening is important and it's real and it's impactful to us. And there was another part to this that you didn't think about, Tripti, is we want to instill in the kids a sense that somebody else cares about them.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody cares about their life. And somebody's willing to give money to them, even though that person may never see them.
Yeah.
Entire life, this person has stepped forward and given.
Right.
And that child doesn't owe you something in return.
Yeah.
Except maybe passing that on to somebody else. It's a passive.
Yeah. Form.
And that's something I talk about a lot with the kids. I'm like, you know, there's so many people who donate to you and help out and give to the school and all. You don't know anything to that. Like, they're not asking for anything in return. They're not asking for their money back. It's not a loan. It's a donation.
Yeah.
But you do owe something to them to give it.
Yeah. No, I think I really appreciate that idea behind this, you know.
Paying
it forward and doing it without letting them know who's doing it, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I also had another question. So I don't know if I think,
okay.
I think Cafe or I think told you about how I got introduced to Shanti Bhavan and the movie, the Netflix film. So, you know, she's a really good friend of mine, and I value many of her opinions and recommendations. So years ago, she had recommended Shanti Bhavan, the Netflix documentary, to me.
See.
And that's how I started. And I didn't watch it for almost a year because I a lot of times, like, I would see the Netflix Shanti Bhavan sort of being advertised on Netflix. But I was somehow, I never got around to watching it. But I finally did after about a year of you telling me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched the first episode, and the way the movie's been made, like in terms of following the lives of whatever, the five or six students, right from their childhood to what they're doing today. So I watched the first episode and I was hooked, right? I was like, okay, I want to see the next one. I want to see what happens in their lives, right? What are they doing next? So that's how I got hooked onto it. And it just had like a profound impact on me, as you can tell. And the other thing I wanted to discuss, just kind of like explore, was, so the documentary sort of is a documentation of the journey of these five or six kids from the time they get admitted to the school to the time that, you know, they get jobs. Is there anything Shanti Bhavan is doing in terms of measuring how they are, you know, what's happening after their jobs? Like, are they, how are they, how are they helping their communities back, or how are they bringing about a change?
We have a very thorough process. We have a team member who does alumni affairs. Her job is solely to like communicate with the alumni and track these kind of developments.
Right.
And I should probably, you know, I'm going to try to open up this document and find her stats, because it might be interesting to just chat about her a little bit. But one of them, you know, first of all, I should probably add, you know, I'm really glad that you like the documentary. I have very little to do with it. I cannot take any credit for that. That was the product of Vanessa Roth, who is the documentary filmmaker, and she's an independent documentary filmmaker. She was very clear that we would have to be 100% hands-off, and we would have no editorial control, and we wouldn't even really see it until, like, she showed maybe clips every once in a while. Like, she's like, oh, here's what I just shot, you know, and X, Y, and Z, right? But she never allowed me to, like, yeah, she never let me have, like, control over what we were doing. So, what she was doing. So, it was very much like, it was a little bit like, you know, you're holding your breath and hoping everything goes well. But yeah, I think it's probably powerful because it isn't something we did. It's something that an independent person did. And like, they really, you know, they were very, it's just very true. It's very real.
True, exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, we track where they are and what they're doing. And maybe I haven't answered questions around stats, but like maybe these two antidotes will be more powerful or kind of, you know, help your listeners kind of understand what has happened or the impact of Shakti Bhavan, right? So this first one, I'm going to keep being south of this, but I'll just say first one's from a young man. And he said, my family was in terrible debt when I finished college. My father had committed suicide and we had moneylenders knocking on our door to collect. I needed to clear all of my father's debt piled up over the years. Thanks to my accounting and finance education from Shakti Bhavan and from college, I was able to get the moneylenders to renegotiate the terms of the loan, and I restructured the loans to pay them off all over the next 5 years. For a long time, I used most of my income to clear the debt, but now I'm able to save and provide for my mother's and family's. And the second one is from that young lady.
Wonderful, right? Yeah.
Yeah, powerful, right? Bang. And then this is from a young lady. My first job out of college was at Amazon, where I worked for 2 years. I covered the house rent, the cost of basic necessities, my father's eviction expenses, my mother's medical bills, and my brother's education. However, the four of us still lived in a single room with one shared bathroom and a kitchen. After Amazon, I changed jobs to work at the VF Corporation, leading apparel and footwear company. The increase in my salary, I moved my family out of the slum into a safer environment with a regular supply of water and electricity. I continue to pay for my brother to attend school, and I support my aunt and my three cousins with their education since their father was murdered. I've gone on to do my MBA with the help of Shakti Bhavan and have been hired by Google. My father passed away from health complications due to his alcoholism, and I am now the sole income earner for my family.
Well,
this young lady is now 27. I actually just had a call with her last night. So, So these are the extremes that they come from, and they're dealing with even as they get their first jobs. But then here you're seeing some of the impact.
Right.
Okay. What's going on there.
Yeah.
And that's one of the important things about Shakti Bhavan, is that we really track very closely as to what our alumni are doing, how they're doing, the challenges they're facing, give them advice around some early career decisions, you know, how to move up the ladder in their opportunities, but also how to like deal with like loan issues, money lenders and loan issues are the big ones, some of the biggest ones, all of those things. So it's pretty complicated, but we have very good insight into what's going on.
We should make a movie of that side of the story as well.
Yeah.
Kind of like close the loop.
I think it would be helpful for people to understand.
Exactly. Yeah. And now through your journey for the last, your dad's journey, right? I think for the last 20, 25 years with this.
This is going to be the 27th year
of
our organization.
Wow. And your dad's story is also like so inspiring. And again, that was only because I watched the movie that I could, you know, hear his story. And it was just so inspiring. Have there been other, I don't know any other organization in India doing this kind of work. But so since now that you all have been doing this for the last 25 years or so, have there been other organizations doing something similar or any other interest from people who want to do something similar?
As far as I know, we are the only organization in the world that does from the very first day of school to literally the very first day of
world. In the world, imagine.
I don't think there's ever been an organization that does it well like we do, and I don't think there's any that do it even to just that. We've heard of organizations doing now. There is now starting to move away from like a basic literacy as like a benchmark and more, you know, in depth. And so now there are a lot of programs that are longer and that might encapsulate, you know, 3 years, 5 years, you know, all of high school, something like that, right? But we're also seeing them trying to cut corners in a few different ways. So, you know, I want to be careful about not naming names, but like I know another organization that does a mixed model of like wealthy kids and poor kids in a boarding school environment that's supposed to be pretty good. And they actually did a lot of fact finding with us before they started theirs. And then they came back to us 6-7 years later, kind of begging for help to solve problems. And when they explained that it wasn't just for poor kids, so they had wealthy kids as well, we realized what was going on. And what we found is there was a class system between the wealthy kids and the poor kids. And it doesn't really matter that you try to say no, like it happens. And you notice that the wealthy kids have iPhones and they didn't ban all of those things. So they have iPhones and they got all this technology, they got fancy clothes. Black markets were starting to build out in the school. They were dealing with these structural issues, and we're like, hey, I can't actually give you advice on how to handle this because this is not our model. This is not how we structured things. Like, you took some of our ideas, but then you really radically went. I've seen another program that's also longer, but they have, you know, they made choices I worry about the long-term consequences of it. Like, big one is that they lowered some of their standards in their curriculum. It's an easier curriculum than ours. And what I've noticed is that they have lower expectations, you know, of their kids. And they don't have the same pressure in the push. And then when you interact with the kids and you talk to them for a longer period, like, lovely kids, so much is great about them. But, you know, they're not performing academically at the same level. And their own dreams and ambitions and desires for them seem limited.
Okay.
Seem limited. They themselves have started to create glass ceilings for themselves at a young age. So I think our unique mix of this long-term, you know, structural model, along with our systemic approach where we're thinking about all the complexities around education, because it isn't just education. There's all of these issues around life that we're tackling as well. And we teach these skills. You know, I think I should probably explain that, like, it's not just education we're teaching the kids. We're teaching them a tremendous amount of soft skills, public speaking and interview skills and teamwork and interpersonal, you know, support systems. All of these things are there because we need them to understand that, like, life isn't just about the book. It's also about, you know, interacting with other human beings and navigating these spaces that are maybe uncomfortable for you that you're not used to. Like, if you grew up in poverty, then you're going to have challenges of entering, like, white-collar professional spaces and being around people who grew up in wealth or grew up in middle class. So we teach them all of these things, all part of the curriculum. It's really complex about how we approach it. So I think right now, I haven't seen an organization that still has that kind of combined approach and that holistic approach and with that high standard.
Yeah, so I think I'm right in my observation that this so far is the only organization that's doing this model.
Yeah.
It's been model work.
Yeah, right? Like, I'm wondering if the model works so well, like, how come not more
like
people
that. Yeah.
Or organizations? I'm not just like individual.
It's a good question. Really good question.
I think it takes a lot of work. A lot of work. It takes a lot of resources, and it takes a lot of like specific decisions, right? Like, I'm married, but I don't have kids, and there's no plans for me to have kids because I don't think I can divide my attention between my work and in the way that I feel like I'm almost like a parental figure to hundreds of kids, and I don't know if I can navigate between that thoughtfully. Our team is on call all the time because there could be a medical emergency, there could be some kind of emotional crisis going on with kids in college. Like, it's a lot of work, it's a lot of resources, and that level of dedication and devotion takes a really unique individual willing to kind of put all of that work in. So our staff is very specifically vetted and a really very, I'd say, like, they're true believers. Like, they believe in the cause and the crusade, and they're willing to give their all for it. And so it's intense work, intense resources, and I think it takes a very specific ethos and mindset to approach it at this level.
Yeah.
And also I'd say that, like, from a fundraising perspective, it's harder. We find it harder to convince individuals when they say, well, how many kids do you have in your program? I'll say, well, at the school, there's about 300. At college, there's another 50. And of course, 150, 160 of them graduated from it. And they're like, well, this other organization I know of has 3,000 kids in the education. So 10 times more than Yale, right? And we're doing this and this and this. And that's it's easier to convince donors if you're doing thousands and thousands of
people. Yeah.
My question often to them is, hey, do you have any data about where those kids are after they graduate from the program? Do they have good jobs? Are they able to, like, take care of themselves? Because our data, when we've done research, shows that they basically go back to the same level. So
and that's what you have to start small. I guess you're starting small, making sure it's like really well tested and everything before scaling up and making it.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll scale a lot. Like, we're building a second school, and that's opening up starting this year. But I'm a strong believer in the high touch model and kind of what I said before, which is I want to create catalysts that will go on into other things that will have impact. So what I believe is that our graduates will build the next generation of companies, both as individuals but together as well, right? If we think about some of the biggest companies that came out in the world, Meta, Facebook was a bunch of Harvard kids together, right? Mark Zuckerberg, so everybody knew his hand, but like, it was actually like his roommates and his friends and all of them working together. And that they started off. Then the Google boys for Google, right? It's the people you know and you build things together with. And it's the same way with the Shanti Bhavan kids. They're doing engineering, they're doing business, they're doing law, they're doing all of these different things. They have all the skill sets from all of these different areas. They all grew up together. They can start building companies together. They can start, building new NGOs together. They can start running for all political positions together. I think they're going to be the catalyst of change makers that will have large impact on the world in very, very unique and special ways. My role and Shanti Bhavan's role is to build that bridge to empower these catalysts to go on and do those. So I don't want a scale where we're doing tens of thousands, because for us, it's not sustainable. Like, I would have to find an enormous amount of resources in terms of money. But like, let's say somebody decided to drop a couple billion dollars on us. Even then, I would need to find like the people that I would trust. Because like, once you get past a couple, two, three schools, can the leadership even know what's happening in the schools, right? I spend so much time like walking those classrooms and going to the dorms and seeing what's happening on the ground. And like, when we book the second school, I'll be dividing my time and I'm going to be moving full time to India, actually. And so I will be able to travel between these schools and see what's going on. But once you get past a certain level of growth, you start losing your insight and understand. I don't want to ever have that to happen.
Yeah.
And you have to trust like your team. You have to have really, really great team members. Like, it's one thing when it's a corporation and you're giant, because it's like, cool, there's no major risk. I mean, sure, the company could grow so big that there's corruption and there's going to be inefficiencies and there's going to be stealing and all of that, or funneling of money or something. I'm sure there's, people doing stuff with their expense accounts or something they're not supposed to, whatever. Not the biggest problem in the world. When it comes to human lives, when it comes to children, I never want a single child in my organization to ever have that situation. I want to be able to understand everything that's going on the ground intimately. And so I would be very reluctant to scale beyond.
Yeah. No, that's true. So actually, like while you were talking about all this, it also struck me like to this point about why there aren't other organizations or other people wanting to do similar work. I guess it also takes like this one person who is motivated, like your dad was, who has the resources and the will and the purpose, wanting to do something like this to, you know, kind of like just be dedicated to it 100% with the resources that he had. So not everybody wants to do that. So
I'm
lucky to have you, Ajit. I mean, dad is lucky to have you. I mean, you're looking at the painting behind me and 18 others my mom has painted. I also don't have children. And part of the reasons why I feel like, oh, I just have kids and they'll carry on her work. And that's not guaranteed, right?
Right.
You can't just expect. I think it's one thing to say, you should have children. And Ajit, you can force him to like what his grandpa did. Well, that's not guaranteed. I think this is such a legacy piece. And it's a very complex matter. But you also, you know, can assume that somebody can just assume the responsibility. And I love the fact that last time we didn't really get to talk about the scaling of it all. But now more so these days, I've been running a business since 2016. And a lot of clients are like, Faye, just you can scale this. You can make so much money. And for every business I started, I said, no, I want to service a handful, a small number of clients really well. And they love us. And that's how we're happy.
Yeah.
I mean, if I scale, I'm not going to spend time like this, I'm not going to care give to my mom. This is like the perfect model and very sustainable. In fact, in the U.S. especially, you see so many businesses, all they want to do, AI or otherwise, is about scaling. And what's going to happen in 3 months, 6 months, 1 year max, they're all burned out, you know, crash into flames. And I'm so glad that, you know, Shanti Bhavan have such a like a wise leadership to know precisely where you fit and where you want to go. So,
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, it took somebody like my father, who's a serial entrepreneur and ex-military man, to have the vision and the drive and the, like, you know, the persistence, the perseverance to create it.
Exactly.
And, you know, he's done incredible things beyond Shanti Bhavan. I don't know if I talk about it last time while I was on, but he did the largest testing and treatment of lead poisoning ever done in the world. And he did it in India in the 90s and helped introduce unleaded gasoline in India. It forced the government to change its laws around unleaded gasoline. So that was one of my father's pioneering works. And in terms of environmental impact, that you know, has an impact for a billion people. He never was big about fanfare or getting news about it, so he didn't really care. He did it and moved on. I was like, Dad, man, you should have hired a PR firm and gotten you like a major humanitarian prize for it. He got a few awards at Hindutva for it and a couple other things there. But he didn't really bother because that wasn't really, he's not here for the rewards or the public. But it was his drive and vision. And I grew up in this culture and attitude and mindset. And so you're right. You know, a child can go in a very different direction and can either, you know, believe a parent's vision or can completely go in an absolutely different direction. But I really believed and understood my father's vision. And I see opportunities for growth beyond what he's built. And I think I can expand on not necessarily the size, but things that we can do. I've got different ideas about how we might evolve and figure out new solutions to new problems and, you know, give better roads to success for our kids. Those are the things I'm working on. And then after my time, I think, you know, passing it on to Shanti Bhavan graduates themselves.
Yeah.
They're the ones who grew up in the environment and know it the best. And I think the next generation of leaders after my time will be those who grew up at Shanti Bhavan.
So, so I have to tell you this, and maybe I did mention that in my email to you, but talking about soft skills, teaching them soft skills, you know, there was a gala here in the Boston area by Shanti Bhavan last year, and I had attended that, and it was just a pleasure to be there and meet all the kids and some of the staff, you know, who had flown from India.
I'm going to go next
time. But the kids, I'll let you know when they're here next time. But the kids, I have to tell you, so there were three boys, I don't remember their names, but I remember talking to them, interacting with them. And one of them was also, you know, addressing the whole crowd over there. So I have to say, I was so impressed by, you know, the soft skills. They were so confident. They were so articulate and so self-assured. And, you know, it was just amazing to see that. And they were all studying in really good universities over here. And one of them was in Dartmouth. And I also shared my phone number with them. I was like, anytime you guys have any questions or if you're in town, you need any help, let me know. But of course, I haven't got any calls from them. I'm guessing they're all good.
Yeah, we have a really good support system that kind of checks in on them. Christina, who's our manager of alumni affairs, is always watching over them. I believe for Boston, we had Sam Samuel, who is at Dartmouth. And then Danush was also there, and he's also from Dartmouth. So we have two students who are there. I wonder if Naveen, if you said there was three boys there.
Sam and Danush. I remember.
Okay, so I think it's just two. I think it was actually just two of them.
I thought there was one more. Is Danush like the public speaker? He likes.
I think Sam spoke at.
Okay.
Both of them. So the thing is, every single child of Shanti Bhavan gets trained to speak.
Okay.
I think Sam only was the only one who spoke, but Danush just spoke in Austin. Among the many different things that we train them on is on public speaking. Like we start at the very young stage when they're in preschool. After they're a few months at the school, and they've learned English because they don't know English, and they feel confident. They come up in front of the stage and do this really cute song, and they say their name and where they're from and how old they are, and everybody in the entire school is there for this. And so they're seeing all of the kids and all of the staff and all the teachers, and we cheer and applaud for them and really encourage them. And they feel really great to do that. Right. As they get older, they do things like reading the virtue for the day. So like if you watch the series, you'll see something like patience or generosity, or those are the virtues, and they'll do that in front of the entire school. And then when they're older still, they'll do the news, where they're communicating news articles for the day and discussing it. And they're fielding questions from the audience on the news questions. So they really need to know the news. They have to have it and they're not allowed to read from like a script. So this is all done from like their knowledge, absorbing the news. They communicate the news, like one news article, each of them, there's four of them, they communicate this news article. And then they field questions to them about the news article while everybody in the entire school is watching. As you can imagine, this is high pressure. And a lot of kids, like, they hate it while they're doing it. They're like, this is the worst. Later on, as they get more confident, they go, this is the best. Like, what it taught me is to be able to handle myself under incredible pressure, stand and deliver a presentation in front of everybody, like hundreds of people, be able to field questions and creatively think an answer. And if they don't know the answer, they're supposed to do one of two things: take an educated guess, like try to logically puzzle it out. Or they're supposed to say, hey, I don't know the answer to this question, but I will get you an answer tomorrow. And by tomorrow, they're supposed to have a response.
I just noticed something so profound that you started naming people from an event you didn't even attend personally. If you have 3,000 people at the school, you'll never be able to name anybody.
You start to lose sense of who's who and what they're doing and so on. So It is that intimate knowledge of each human being that is within our school. And then I am ultimately responsible. That's really important.
I have to ask a very real question. Both of you named a bunch of kids attending schools in the US, and I know you didn't start doing this just a few years ago. So as we all know, like, going to college in the US, one of the most expensive places in the world, college tuitions will knock a family like upside down, as it's happening to a number of people I know.
Yeah.
Like, how did you not only get kids to go to US college, but go to places like Dartmouth, as you named, and, you know, later when you said working at Google or Amazon, I assume actually both locations, right? Seattle, as well as maybe some primary locations in India. Like, how do you encourage kids to do so, like, while bringing on potential financial burden for Shanti Bhavan? I just wonder.
So actually, until a few years ago, all of our kids did do college in India. And that for exactly the reasons you brought up, Faye. We did not feel like we had the capabilities or financial abilities to tackle this question. We didn't even have the knowledge about how to tackle this question. And then in 2019, we made the move, and that caused some problems because the pandemic happened, and then the kids who got in had to defer for a year and stuff like that happened. But what happened was, we weren't in the position of growth in the organization. We said, hey, I think we can tackle this problem. But we looked at the analysis of it and we realized we can't tackle this problem unless the kids get 100% scholarships. Because in the U.S., the cost of just even the living, like let's say get a full academic scholarship, if the living expenses alone would just tank our entire budget. So they have to get both the living expenses and the academic. And we'll pay for the incidentals, which is like maybe a plane ticket over from India. Maybe it's plane tickets to some place while they're on vacation. Maybe some extra, you know, things that they need in like the dorm. That still ends up being thousands of dollars a year, but it's much more like doable. But we basically, we took the highest performers of every year, and that was actually a real motivator for them to take their studies real seriously, because they're like, oh, I get a chance to study abroad. And they had to apply on merit to these colleges. And so we have been really successful over the years. We've gotten a few kids into different colleges. One young man's at Stanford, two at Dartmouth, one at Duke.
Scholarships?
Yeah, they're 100%. Wow. Living expenses and educational. Middlebury, University of Rochester, University of Chicago. And I'll share some good news that like isn't public knowledge yet. A young man just got into Princeton on a full scholarship, 100% scholarship.
Oh my God.
So his package is like $95,000 a year, basically, because it covers both the tuition and living expenses. So, and we've got a couple other kids who are like, didn't get an early decision, but their fingers crossed that they'll get on a regular decision to other colleges. They're not trying for Princeton. So that's also part of our thing, right? Is that like, we have to build out a programming where like, cool, you went to school in India at Shanti Bhavan, and you have to take the ISC exam. That's their final exam, which is a national exam, which is very tough. And then you have to pivot right after you finish that, and you have to take the SATs. Because while some of these colleges are SAT optional, most of them aren't. And even if they're SAT optional, we have to show them something, because they're a foreign student at a nonprofit school, and they got to prove that like they belong in these institutions. So they basically finish their ICSE exams in like late Feb or middle of March, really, actually. Middle of March, end of March is what usually when they finish it up. They pivot immediately and study for a couple months, and then they take the SAT and then they apply to college. So it is like breakneck speed of like hard work and discipline. And I'll tell you this, our kids at these colleges are at basically 3.5 GPAs or better. So they're competing at these top colleges with the best of the best across the world, and they're getting a 3.5 or a 3.7. They're getting internships at like private equity firms or investment banks. They're doing amazing. And it really does prove the model that like Shanti Bhavan isn't just good for the region. It isn't just good for a small nonprofit school in South India. And it's not just good for like Tamil Nadu. And it's not just good for India. It's good on a global level. Like these kids are competitive with the best of the best across the world at these premier institutions.
And I think on top of that, it's great. I think what I personally find most valuable is the fact that when I look at the movies, like mental health wise, they're really checked, they're really nurtured, and which is something that nobody can say much, like anywhere in the world, right? Like kids are struggling with all sorts of things and mental health is often ignored. And you mentioned, you know, kids coming from the slum, moving to, you know, the city, the big cities in India, I remember seeing from the documentary, but now we're talking about, are you kidding me? Like Stanford, Princeton, I feel like they're ready, you know, because they've already mentally prepared for a lot of these changes to happen. And that to me is just so profound.
I mean the young man at Princeton, like, you know, he came from family that he's an orphan actually, and his father had committed both of his parents committed suicide. It's a really, really tragic story. And when you think about, like, I knew his story really well, and it, for his own privacy's sake, I didn't want to like go into like a large detail on podcast, but like when you think about what happened in his childhood at this extremely young age, and what he lost, losing both parents in these really tragic ways, as we all know, you know, an orphan in the U.S. rarely can, you know, they're in tough positions, and then there's a lot of extra hurdles in front of them. And then in India, there's like 100 more hurdles like attached to a child that's an orphan. The idea that an orphan could go from there to Princeton,
yeah,
unreal, on a full scholarship,
Right. It's unreal. That's what it is. Yeah.
And I'm so glad Princeton, what is Princeton's privilege to have a child at their university, not right? just, right?
For exactly.
Or not just diversity, but yeah. it's just, I feel like they're the kids, so many, we assume that people at Harvard and Princeton are so brilliant. But who are we to say that, you know, people are nurtured and loved their whole life,
right.
they're able to climb up there.
Yeah.
And a child who came from absolutely nothing, no parents to be able to be there, he deserved more than anybody else, right? Like,
yeah.
really. Yeah.
I think, you know, to give Princeton a lot of credit, their admissions team felt the same way. They were very...
Right. Princeton.
Yeah, they were very warm. Like, it was like he got this lovely letter, but then he got a personalized, like, response from the admissions to people who were very... generous in their praise and generous in their attitude. Like, I was very surprised. I was like, go Princeton, I love you guys. You guys have a very positive
shout out.
Thoughtful yeah. mindset. So they're I got to give them so much kudos to the admissions.
We'll send really, the slip.
They said, they I think they thought all the things you just said, babe. Like, that was their attitude.
Wow, incredible.
Right, yeah.
So I want to respect everybody.
Yeah.
I know you guys have got a crazy travel schedule. Are you currently in the U.S.? Or
I am. I'm about to leave tomorrow for India. So you caught me right before I fly out. It's a shock.
Wow. Yeah. So you're moving there permanently, are you?
I am. This trip is not about me moving permanently. I'm going to be there for 2 months on the ground at Shanti Baba, which is my normal trip. For the last 16 years of my life, I would do 4 months in India, 2 months in January, and 2 months in June and July. That's another reason why I, you know, the choice of being a father was not something I thought was reasonable with my work schedule and my dedication to the organization. But then my wife and I are moving full time to India, and she'll be moving first, and then I will be joining her at the end of August.
And you do this 100% of what you dedicate.
As I think you can probably tell from all the complexities we've discussed today, and we've only scratched the surface of really all that goes on with the organization. It's a full time job and a half.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
That's a lot.
So Ajit, we will wrap it up by, you know, saying like, how can we best people best support your organization, how to learn more about your work?
Yeah, I think to learn more about our work, you can always still watch the documentary. I think watching Daughters of Destiny on Netflix is...
Yeah, I think now you'll catch a lot of other details that we talked about. So.
Yeah, it's a great documentary, and it really does. It covers 7 years of our life in 4 episodes. So 4 hours, really. There's still 7 years distilled into four hours, but it really will give you an insight about who we are, what we're doing, why we're special. And I think it'll be a very powerful and emotional journey. Show. But you can also jump on the website, and, you know, we're at shantibabanchildren.org, and you can always learn about that. And then there's also a book written by one of our graduates called The Elephant Chaser's Daughter. That's another great insight about Shanti Bhavan and all. So we'd love to, you know, invite people to get involved. If you're able to support us or donate, always welcome it. If you're interested in volunteering down the road, it's a bit of a commitment, but if you're interested, you can always apply to be a volunteer. So there's different ways to get involved.
Thank you so much, Ajit. I just want to find a way for us to keep in touch and continue to contribute something maybe we can do in, you know, in Boston or the general Massachusetts area.
Thank you so much. This was a wonderful opportunity to talk to you and, you know, get information directly from you. And I hope it was helpful.
No, this was wonderful. It was great talking to you both. And thank you for such interesting questions, Shakti. It was a very special interview because I think it was different in terms of your perspective to get your thoughts on it. So thank you so much.